making TV here, people, so this will be fun. Okay, stand by. Yeah, give me 30 seconds of music, and you begin anytime.
Welcome, everyone, to the National Federation of the Blind Conference here at the wonderful Embassy Suites on the northwest side of Indianapolis. My name is Kelly Vaughn, and I'm with WHMB TV 40. And what you are about to experience is the live taping of the NFB Newsline television show. NFB Newsline Indiana, hosted by Lee Barton and Florence McSwine. We'll begin tonight's program speaking to or hearing from Ron Brown, who is the president of the Indiana chapter of the National Federation of the Blind. Ron?
Yes. Greetings, fellow Federationists, and greetings to all of our guests. Yes. This is our annual state convention, and we consider this our kickoff show for the night. This whole weekend, we will be here at the Embassy Suites, and we will be talking about blindness. We will be celebrating our blindness. You'll be hearing from different speakers, and we have a fun-packed weekend ahead for you all. All of you who may not have an opportunity to stay for the whole convention, please come out and join us and help us to celebrate our state conference. Tonight we have a really good show, and I want to start our show off by introducing two of our youngest Federationists, and they are Jaden and Jordan DeBrow. Now, Jaden and Jordan will be saying our National Federation of the Blind pledge and the brand promise. So without further ado, here's Jaden and Jordan.
Hello, my name is Jaden DeBrow, and I'm Jordan DeBrow, and I will be saying the pledge. And the brand. I pledge to participate actively in the efforts of the National Federation of the Blind to achieve equality, opportunity, and security for the blind, to support the policies and programs of the Federation, and to abide by its constitution.
And now we will say the brand.
The National Federation of the Blind knows that blindness is not the characteristic that defines you or your future. Every day we raise the expectations of blind people because low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. You can live the life you want. Blindness is not what holds you back.
All right, the ultimate cheerleaders for the National Federation of the Blind. Well, we're going to do a special presentation, but before we do that, I'd like to introduce who Lee Martin and Florence McSwine will be interviewing during our first taping of the National Federation of the National Federation of the Blind NFB Newsline TV show. And I'd like to introduce to you Dr. Mark Maurer.
Yeah.
Show him some love. He is the former president of the National Federation of the Blind. He served from 1986 to 2014. Wow. All right. Amazing, amazing. He also works as an attorney specializing in civil rights law. Lord knows we need that today. And issues related to blindness. So we welcome him and his wife, Patricia Maurer.
Yeah.
Welcome. to the state convention. And at this time, we have a special presentation for you, Patricia, from Jean Brown. She has some lovely, lovely roses for you.
The National Federation of the Blind of Indiana would like to thank you, Mrs. Maurer, for being our First Lady for 28 years. We love you in Indiana, and we are so pleased to have you here today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jean. Oh, they're lovely, and we love you too.
Thank you.
They're beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks, Jean. Watch the cord. All right. Wasn't that wonderful? Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, let's get the show on the road.
Right.
The NFB Newsline Indiana television show, which you can watch 11:30 a.m. on WHMB TV 40.
So, Dr. Maurer, thank you for coming to Indiana. And what is it that you like about the NFB Newsline, sir?
Well, I read the Investor's Business Daily and the Wall Street Journal, and I read the Baltimore Sun, and then I read USA Today, and sometimes I read other things. One time, a couple of years ago, it was getting to be Christmas, and I was going to have a goose for Christmas because that's what I do. And, you know, Charles, it was good enough for Charles Dickens, it's good enough for me. So I thought I'd better have a goose for Christmas, and I thought I think I should find out exactly how to cook a goose. And I got onto the NFB Newsline, you can search Newsline, and I put in goose recipe, and I came up with four different recipes, so there's not just one way to cook a goose, you can cook it four different ways, and I found this out from Newsline.
I must ask, Ms. Mount, how was that goose after it was done?
That man can cook a goose.
He can cook a goose. Well, and do you read the Newsline as well?
Oh, sure,
now,
I do.
What is it that you like about the NFB Newsline?
Well, USA Today, I think, was our first newspaper years and years ago, and I've always enjoyed that newspaper, so I read that. And one of the things that I like is the fact that you can just go in and look at, you know, different papers and different magazines that you might just read one time or a couple times, you know, dip in and out of things. And I've always enjoyed doing that. I really hope people will do that. I like to read the London News, for example. That's fun to read.
Can anyone in the audience tell me what is the number one section of the newspaper? Everybody knows that, huh? I had one subscriber tell me that he loves reading the newspaper. He transplanted back to Indianapolis, and he loves reading the newspaper because he wants to make sure that he's not in there. So, Dr. Maurer and Ms. Maurer, I want to know, 28 years, been a national president, correct?
I've been president for 28 years, but it stopped 4 years ago, so.
So I want to know, number one, how did you get started with the National Federation of the Blind?
Well, in 1969, I ran into a fellow by the name of Kenneth Jernigan, who was then president of the National Federation of the Blind, and he was a very demanding human being. He was himself a blind person, as I am, and he said that you can accomplish whatever you want to accomplish as a blind person, except you aren't going to be able to see. And I thought, this guy might not know what he's talking about, but the story is great, and if he does know what he's talking about, there's something for me to know around here. And I stayed around to find out what was happening in the National Federation of the Blind. And soon I became president of our student organization in 1971. And I moved to Indiana because Dr. Jernigan had said to me, if you want to go to college, there are lots of colleges to go to, but you're thinking of going to a Catholic college, why don't you go to Notre Dame? That's a good school. And I thought I'd heard of it, but I'd never considered trying. And I applied and I was permitted to come. And I came to Indiana, and in 1971, I was also elected vice president of our affiliate here, and then in 1973, our president. So I got in the midst of knowing everybody in Indiana. And the reason that the Federation matters is that it has a whole lot of blind people in it who decide that what they're going to do is go change their lives and change the lives of other blind people and do things that other people believe that blind people can't do. And as an example, when I was planning for my summer before I went to college, I tore apart an 8-cylinder gasoline engine and rebuilt it, and that got me interested in mechanics, and so I got a job as a lawnmower mechanic for that summer. People called me Mr. Dirt because I was very often covered with grease and whatnot. But I fixed lawnmower engines and small engines and lots of other devices, tractors and air compressors and like that, and made money for the first time. And I thought, this idea that blind people can go out there and get work in the ordinary activities of life and earn money is real, and I've got to learn more about it, and I've got to get a lot of people together. So here's one thing. One more thing? Okay, and it goes like this. I got to thinking, after I got to know the National Federation of the Blind, that we have one thing that nobody else has. And that is, we have a whole lot of active, aggressive, interesting, assertive, imaginative, inventive blind people together. So when most people go to a place and they find a bunch of blind people, they think, oh no, what am I going to do? And I go to a place and there are a lot of blind people there, and I say, great, a whole lot of blind people, what are we going to do? And somehow the imagination that I have in how we're going to change programs and build new things and have new experiences and go new places and have a lot of fun together, when I think, what are we going to do, it's a lot different from the way the other people think when, for example, I walk off an airplane and they see me walking around in the airport by myself and they think, a loose blind person, oh no, what are we going to do? And I think, I don't know what you're going to do, but I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go find my way to the place I'm going, and then we're going to start building things and having fun together and make ourselves a new life that's more independent.
Now, Mrs. Knox,
yes, ma'am.
Now, that's your husband. And he is very impressive. That is awesome. Now, how long have you been a Federationist?
I thought you'd never ask. I love telling this story because, you see, I joined the Federation before Mark Maurer did. So, yeah, see, look at that. So, I joined in 1968. I was just a senior in high school, and I ran into an opportunity to learn some Braille at the training program in Iowa, and there I met Dr. Jernigan, and he also gave me the chance to do things like go with the students to the state fair and, you know, do some cane travel. And by the time I was out of high school, then I was able to go back and finish my training program and go to college. Dr. Maurer and I were married in 73, so that means that we've been married for 45 years.
Yeah. 45 years of marriage. Wow, yep. Dr. Maurer. We're going to take us a short pause for the calls here, and we'll be right back. We got to do this commercial, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Mrs. Maurer, because I want to get the skivvy on Dr. Maurer. Real quick.
The National Federation of the Blind, Newsline, Indiana. Well, let's give TJ and the band a hand. Yeah. Here. Thank you, TJ. Now, Mrs. Maurer, you mentioned in the last segment that you've been married for 45 years. Now, the question I have for you is, how is it to be married to the former president of the NFB for all these years?
Well, it's a pretty simple answer. It was a lot of fun, and it's still a lot of fun, and we worked hard, and we still work hard. So we have very full lives, and we have two wonderful children who are grown, and we love to brag on them all the time because they're such great kids. And so, I mean, I don't think I could ask for anything more.
And Dr. Maurer?
Yes, sir.
How fun is it to be married to such a lovely woman for that enormous amount of years?
It's a splendid thing. I'm glad she doesn't want anything more because that's what she got.
You know, over 28 years, the Federation has came down many paths. And would you want to share with us some of the challenges that you've had as president, being the voice of the nation's blind?
Well, the challenges that I've had, some of them we've solved, some of them we have not. And so we got to talk about two categories. Take, for example, we have wanted to have access to information. Now, the Newsline program does a lot of that. We have found a way to solve this problem using electronic systems primarily. And so we have hundreds of newspapers and dozens of magazines, and they're available every day, and we try to get them ready every morning by 6:30 in the morning. So that's a great beginning. But one of the things that came along in the late 1980s, early 1990s, was the portable phone. And it started out as a fairly big thing, but we thought this would be wonderful, as lots of other people did. Some people said it would die out. You can see how they are at predicting the future. But it was heavy to carry, but it wasn't as, you know, it was portable, so you could take it with you. And that was great. It had buttons on it, and you could call people on it and do things like that. But it didn't have a lot of other things. And then pretty soon, it got other pieces. It got a clock in it, and you couldn't read the clock. And it got other methods of communication, and pretty soon you had the early versions of what you now have in your pockets, this cell phone, which is made by Apple or somebody else. And so we started trying to figure out how to get these things to be usable by blind people, and we call this accessibility. And we'd been thinking about how to do that. We'd developed computer technology in the 1970s late to make the computer talk. And we thought, great, we've now solved the problem of how to get information out of the computer. We just put a voice box in it, and then it'll talk, and we can get all the information, and it's all digital. It's in these ASCII characters. The trouble is that after the ASCII system went away, ASCII is 255 characters, and after that went away, what came later is pictures of characters. And you couldn't get them to come out in the same way because they were all little pictures. And we were trying to figure out, how do you get verbal information out of the computer now? And that same problem happened with the iPhone when it came out, because it was just one flat piece of glass. And how do you get the piece of glass to talk to you? It did have a speaker in it, but how do you figure out which part of the piece of information you want? So we were stumped. And we started talking to the people over at Apple, and they said, yeah, we're stumped too. And we said, but you got to do it. And they said, yeah, we'll sure do it one day when we get plenty of time. And we thought, we know what that means. Whenever they say, wait till we have plenty of time, that means you're never getting it, because they'll never have plenty of time. So we said, you're now using this, and we've got to be able to communicate with it. Number one, we want to call people on it. And number two, it has lots of other things in it, and we want access to them. And they said, because it was being used in school. If you went to school, you went to certain colleges, you had to use these phones in order to do your coursework. And we said, if we leave you alone, what we're going to do is find out that we can't go to college. And so pretty soon we got annoyed enough that we started talking to the lawyers about what to do about them. And then they said, oh, you're serious. And we said, yeah, we're serious. And they said, well, we can probably work this out in the next 6 months or so. And so we worked with them. We thought, there's no way you can get anything through a lawsuit, a court system, any court system in 6 months. It never happens. And if you're going to be willing to work with us and work this out, we can get accessibility. So the iPhone 3 had accessibility built into it out of the box. It wasn't as good as it is today, but it was pretty good, better than we'd had before because we had nothing before that. And now we have an accessibility system built on lots of different phones that are flat screen platforms. The Google company has it and the Apple company has it. And to some degree, it's a smaller degree, but the Amazon company has some of it. And I don't know whether it's built into Samsung yet or not, but I know that we know what to do now. So we'll get accessibility built into all these products. And not only does it work well on the phone, but it works well on the computer with all the tablet screens that are coming along. So that was a success. This is access to information. What we want in the National Federation of the Blind is 100% access to 100% of information 100% of the time. We've had so little of that over the years. We've always had to wait. We've always had to wait for somebody to figure it out, for somebody to read it to us, for somebody to take time or whatever it is. And we want now access. Digital information is essentially machine program product, which is made out of ones and zeros, and we say 100% of the information 100% of the time, and we don't quit until we get it. That's the way we feel about it. Now, let me talk to you about something else, though. What do you think? It's legal in the United States to pay disabled people less than the minimum wage. Some of you know this. And this came into the law in 1938. In 1938, we got the Fair Labor Standards Act. The Fair Labor Standards Act said that there would be a minimum wage in the United States. It's the first time the federal government had done it. There'd been some efforts to do it in some states earlier. Some of them had succeeded, some of them not. But it's the first time the federal government had tried to do it. And in the law, written in 1938, is this piece which says, but if you're disabled, you don't get the minimum wage. You can be paid less than the minimum wage. They said that they had to do it because otherwise disabled people wouldn't go to work. Well, disabled people weren't working anyway, so I don't know why they're worried about it too much. Except now and then in a place that is set aside for disabled people to work called the Sheltered Workshop. Sheltered workshops were set up for the blind first and then for other disabled people. And they are places where government contracts come along and the people who work in them don't have to be paid the minimum wage. And it's happening all over the United States right now. It's estimated that there are a couple hundred thousand people in the United States getting less than the minimum wage today. Now, we have introduced in the Congress the Transition to Integrated and Meaningful Employment Act, TIME, we call it. It's absolutely time to change this law. We want this law to say that everybody, doesn't matter what your disability might be, everybody gets the chance to have the same legal protection of minimum wage law that is out there for the majority of the population. I believe we have 88 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, both Republicans and Democrats. And we think that it's time to change the law. We think that having legal discrimination, which says that you can pay people less just because they have a disability, this is wrong, and we think the Congress should change it.
Now, you sound like an attorney to me. Dr. Maurer, now before you actually became a Federationist, what actually drove you, I'll put it that way, into advocacy? Have you always been an advocate?
No, I didn't think anything about advocacy. I didn't know about advocacy. I didn't know about leadership. I joined the National Federation of the Blind and somebody said, maybe you could be a leader. And I thought, yeah, but I don't know how to do that. And then my president, Dr. Kenneth Jernigan at the time, said, you know, you could be a leader, and here's how you do it. He showed me certain things, and he said, and besides which, I was studying engineering. I thought I'd be an engineer. He said to me, you can be an engineer, and you can build products, and they'll be good products, and people will need them, and they'll want them, and they'll like them, and you'll help to make things better for people if you build products and invent new things, and that's great. You could be an engineer, no problem. He said, but if you want to change the world, you got to do something else. If you want to change the way society works, you've got to know about society, and you've got to study something else. And so I studied philosophy and law. And the legal work that I've done has been inspired by the demands of my friends in the National Federation of the Blind. They say, other people get this, why can't we get this? And sometimes we've done it with law. I mean, the work with the accessible technology, we've done it with the law. We had got a law adopted in 2001 which said that there has to be an opportunity for disabled people, especially blind people, but other disabled people too, to cast a secret ballot. Before that, you had to go with some judge, election judge, into the ballot box to help cast your ballot because there was no way to do it secretly and privately. So we got this law adopted, and there was a little time to get the regulations put into effect, but by 2006, all of the voting booths, all of the precincts in the United States that use federal dollars were supposed to have a voting booth that would let you vote privately and independently. And in 2006, for the first time in my life, I walked into the voting booth and cast my ballot, and I didn't have to tell another single soul who it was that I was voting for. So that's part of it. But part of it is being recognized as people of value. If you have people of value, then you pay them at least the minimum wage. If you have people of value, you pay them the prevailing wage. And you think, you're important enough to me that I want to keep you here, so I'm going to pay you a decent piece of money to keep you around so that you'll do the kind of work I want. And I'm a lawyer. I think up legal systems to change things. But sometimes I'm not entirely a lawyer. So back in, what was it, 2009 or something like that, I got to thinking, we kept talking about things that blind people couldn't do. And we kept saying there are these things that blind people can't do. We know blind people can't see, and that's maybe a big deal, but we think it's a less of a big deal than some people think it is. But we always said that blind people can't drive, and I thought, why can't blind people drive? This is a matter of managing a complicated system that has controls and getting enough information to know how to manage it. So it's an information gathering process that we need, and we need to build an automobile that the blind can drive. So I suggested this to my colleagues, and they all thought, you've lost your mind. And I thought, maybe, but let's find out first. And so we got some engineers together, and we said, let's build this car. And they said, no problem. We'll build one that'll drive itself. You can sit in the back seat, and we'll say we've declared victory. And we said, no, we want to drive it. We want to get behind the wheel and press the accelerator and the brake and turn it left and right and make it go faster and slower and all that. And they said, but you could run into something. We said, yeah. Sighted people run into stuff all the time. You know, all the accidents in the world are caused by sighted people. There are lots of accidents, and some of them are very bad accidents, and sighted people do this. Do we tell people they can't drive because they're sighted? No. We let them in the cars, and we say, go ahead. So now we want to figure out an information gathering system. We built this car that the blind can drive, and we put it on the Daytona International Speedway, and I want you to know I didn't drive it because I wasn't the best driver. I'm sorry to say. We found another guy. He's now president of the NFB, name of Mark Riccobono, and he would like to bring you greetings and all that, and he's a good guy, and he drove the car on the Daytona International Speedway. Now, I rode out onto the track, and my job, we had the man who was the head of this transportation subcommittee in the House of Representatives, and he was going to drive it out on the track because we wanted publicity to show off that we knew what we were doing, and this guy, who was a member of Congress, thought, you've lost your mind. But my job was to ride out there with him and to make sure he didn't shut off the car because that would turn off the computers.
Wow. So, you guys, you see why we have Dr. Maurer here.
Yes.
And it's a learning experience. And, you know, success is a function of real expectations. And he has real expectations in this life. So we're going to take a break. We're going to pause, close out this show. And we'll be back next week for our second segment of this show. So stay tuned. Tune in next week and enjoy the show. Welcome, everyone, to the National Federation of the Blind Newsline, Indiana. This is our second segment of our show with our esteemed guests, Dr. Mark Maurer and his lovely wife, Ms. Patricia Maurer. They're here from Baltimore, Maryland, our national office. And please give them a round of applause, please. I tell you, Dr. Maurer, we really enjoyed that first show that we did, and I'm sure that we have a lot more information to cover, so we're just going to get it on. Mm-hmm. So, once again, the National Federation of the Blind has a service. It is a free service. It's called the National Federation of the Blind Newsline. It's a service that allows us print-challenged citizens the opportunity to read publications. As you heard in the first segment, Dr. Maurer and Ms. Maurer love to read a lot of our national publications. Here in the state of Indiana, we have 166,000 citizens that are coping with blindness. And we like to reach out to those citizens to let them know that the National Federation of the Blind exists here in Indiana. And we have an affiliate right here in Indiana with our state president, Mr. Ronald Brown. And if you continue to listen to the commercials and observe the screens, those of you that can see, take the information down and give us a call. And we also have websites, so check out the websites as the commercials are running throughout the show. So, let's talk a little bit more about the Newsline, Florence. I know we have over 500 different publications and 70 different magazines. So we're going to talk about that just a little bit when we come back. So we'll be coming right back to share a little bit more about the Newsline and then talk with our guest. Again, and we're here once again with Dr. Maurer and Mrs. Patricia Maurer. So we left out talking about the vehicles that the blind can drive. Dr. Maurer was studying to be wanted to be an engineer. He became a lawyer, and he became the leader of the National Federation of the Blind, primarily the voice of the nation's blind. We want to thank you for your services, Dr. Maurer, and all that you do. So I know one thing that we wanted to talk about, and what I know the audience is probably itching to ask a few questions. So let's begin. Let's get a few questions in from anyone in the audience. You just want to stand up and ask the question, just go ahead.
Shout our name.
Anybody want to ask a question?
Dr. Maurer.
Yes.
What made you want to become a lawyer in the first place?
Well, becoming a lawyer has lots of advantages to it because it is a legal degree is an entry card into hundreds of different professions, and you have credentials of a kind that you can use in many, many different ways. Number one, you get the idea that you could make yourself some decent money if you got to be a lawyer. Some lawyers do, more than some even. Quite a few do. Some don't, but most do. But beyond that, the idea that I had in mind was that we find a way to make it practical to have a legal system that recognized the rights of people who are disabled more than it did when I started. I thought there was a way for us to change the United States, and if we changed the United States, then we could change other parts of the world as well. And it has worked out that way. We talked to some people back in 2004 about how it would be if we could share books from one country to another. And we didn't know whether that was very important because we have a lot of books in the United States. We were talking about Braille books and recorded books and things like that, except that some of the people who wanted to study languages here in the United States, we don't have enough books for them. So we need Spanish books and French books and, I don't know, maybe other books in other languages as well. We started working on this in about 2009 in the Obama administration, and we were told by the people in the Commerce Department that nobody ever gets a treaty passed in less than 20 years, if they do ever. Some treaties that were recommended to be adopted by the United States in the 1950s still have not been adopted. And they said, you can't do this. Well, a lot of times people tell us we can't do things, and sometimes they're wrong. So we went to Geneva and talked to the United Nations World Intellectual Property Organization over there and persuaded them that this was a good idea. And we worked on a program to put an international treaty together, and we went to a diplomatic conference that occurred in Marrakesh, and then we got the United Nations to adopt a treaty. And then came, this happened in 2013. So it was 5, maybe 6 years from the time we started. And then we had to start thinking about how do you get the United States to adopt it? Because the United States has to have the Senate adopt it. If the president signs it, the Senate still has to agree by a two-thirds vote. And who ever heard of a two-thirds vote in the Senate of the United States in these days? So we started working on this. And then you have to get a bill through Congress that says that we're going to change our law to meet the requirements of the treaty, because you can't have a treaty without a law to implement it in the United States. So you've got to get both the Senate and the House of Representatives to pass it and the President to sign it. The short story, the President signed it yesterday.
Yeah. Another success that we had here recently is space available for veterans. You know, just expound on that a little bit.
Yes, Space A is the program that permits people who are in the military, who are retired and want to fly from one place to another, they can fly on planes operated by the military if there's space available. And we wanted to get people who had suffered permanent and total disability in the service. They're not retired, usually, because they haven't served long enough to get to the retirement place. We wanted people who had received total and permanent disability to be able to use the Space A program so that they could travel from place to place on military aircraft when those spaces were not used by somebody else. And we got that adopted this year as well. So some people say you can't get things out of the Congress. We've gotten two this year.
Is there another question in the
way? Question from the audience. Dr. Brown, I know you've done lots of things in your life. I want to know one thing in particular that you regret not getting done.
There are two things that I wish I'd gotten done before I ceased in the presidency of the National Federation of the Blind, and the adoption of the law that eliminates sub-minimum wage is one of them. I have wanted to do that since the 1970s. I think that the sub-minimum wage law that permits people with disabilities to receive less than the federal minimum wage is outrageous, and I think we ought to change it, and I wish I'd gotten the juice together to get it done before I was no longer president. The other thing is this. In the United States, we have an educational system, and it welcomes lots of people, but it does not welcome blind people very well. The programs to serve blind people and to bring blind people into the programs to teach Braille, to teach science, to teach mathematics, those things and to teach gym class, physical exercise, those things don't happen. If what you do is sit in the class and listen, they'll be glad to have you there. But if you're supposed to write something, if you're supposed to read graphs, if you're supposed to get complicated math, if you're supposed to do laboratories, they mostly don't welcome that. So back in about 2004, we started a program to teach science. And we put together we first called it a science camp. It's gone by many names. It's an engineering program. It's a science program. We teach it for a week. Sometimes we've taught it for 2 weeks. Sometimes we've called it Youth Slam. It had many names. We teach people how to do things scientifically, and sometimes we teach engineering. So these days, we get a bunch of kids in, and we say to them, we've got some teachers here to show you how to do these things. You can get into one of these programs. You can build robots. You can dissect sharks. You can build boats, and we expect them to build rowboats big enough that you can actually float them and then paddle them around the water. And they're supposed to float and not leak. And they also have to build the paddles. And then we teach them enough science so that they can take the water out of the Chesapeake Bay and make it potable. Quite a task if you get right down to the potability of the water in the Chesapeake Bay. And in a week, they build the boats, we launch the boats, they paddle the boats, they do their scientific experiment in the middle of the water in their boats, and they bring them back, and we haven't lost a single one yet. So that is, we've lost a boat, but not any of the students that were in the boat. And this program of education, what we've done is we've taken these guys and we've run them through this. These are either grade school or high school students, and they've gone back to their schools, and their science programs have changed because a lot of them say, yeah, I can do that, and then they go into the labs. Now, they don't teach Braille in school. They don't know Braille very well, and they keep talking about how it's hard, and they keep talking about how it is that it's a dying system. And they make all sorts of excuses because they don't know it, and they don't know how to teach it. And so the kids come out, and they don't know how to read. And Braille is a thing that I use every single day to get information in and to write things. And if I'm going to make a speech somewhere, I want the notes under my hand in Braille because that's the way I know how to do it. And if I'm going to cross-examine somebody, I want the list of questions and so on. I need Braille, and so I know the importance of Braille, and I want the school districts to teach it. We are now teaching Braille in about 50 programs throughout the United States every summer. We've got them in 40 states. Sometimes there are multiple programs in one state. But we could not get the school district to do this. We haven't been able to find a thoroughgoing method to systemically change the school district so that the students get a decent education in school. If we can do that, the literacy rate for blind people and the employment rate for blind people will expand enormously. And I was hoping to find a method to do that before I left.
Is there another question out there?
Hey, Dr. Maurer, how do you feel you were able to grow in your time as student president and affiliate president here in the Hoosier State?
Well, I learned that if you are president of something, people pay attention to you. You may not believe this, but they do. I got to be president of our student division of the National Federation of Blind and National Association of Blind Students, and I wrote to the Department of Education. There was a fellow there who said that he worked on helping students get money out of the Department of Education, and I invited him to come to a meeting to tell us all about it. I did not offer to pay his way. I didn't offer to pay him any stipend or anything. I just asked him to come, and lo and behold, here's this official out of the Department of Education, and he came. And I thought, I've got more power than I thought. And I got to be president of the NFB of Indiana, our Indiana affiliate. And I started working in the legislature on bills to help people in Indiana have greater opportunities. And pretty soon people were calling me up to ask me how they could get things in the legislature. And they wanted to invite me to participate in their... And I thought, I have underestimated myself by a long way. In other words, the people in the affiliate said, well, if we can get this law passed, if we could think up a law and get it passed, then we could have opportunities that we didn't have, and here's the kind of law we need, and they made me do it. So it was the members who said, get out there and get started leading us into the ways that we're supposed to be led and dream up programs for us. And I thought, I have much more power than I ever knew. And if we put this together with people in every state and on the national level, we'll have more power in the Federation than we knew, and we can change our society. So that's what happened.
Okay, now, Mrs. Maurer, I know that, well, we know that behind every great man, there's a phenomenal woman. Now, with that being said, I know that this keeps you really busy. Now, where are you and how do you feel about the parental rights bill?
Well, of course, I believe we should have rights as parents, and I believe in it thoroughly. You know, we talk to people all the time at the NFB who are parents and who are blind parents whose children either are taken away or children... are given to other members of the family or just a whole variety of horrific things. And those things just shouldn't happen. Yeah. And they happen every day. So I think one thing that we can all do, of course, is to help with this, is to make sure that when you hear of blind persons who have these kinds of problems, you get them to the NFB so we can help. But also, sometimes blind people don't realize when something horrible like this happens that there's any recourse for them. So it's our job to educate them, too.
Now, Florence, we have two children. The first of them is David Maurer. And when he was born, he was a tiny little guy, weighed, I don't know, 3.5 pounds or something. And they said that they were going to have to keep him alive in the hospital a while. And they were going to keep him about a month, they said. And then they said, you know, the characteristics of this child, this baby, are such that he is subject to sudden infant death syndrome. And we don't know whether you can care for him, so we think we'll just have to keep him. Now, I looked this situation over and I thought, you are not responsible for him. He's mine. I am responsible for him, and I'm going to figure this out, and I'm going to take him, and I'm going to make sure that he doesn't get into trouble and that he lives and that I can see that he gets the kinds of things he needs, and I'm not turning him over to anybody else. Now, he's 36 at the moment, so he came through. I guess he's 36.
Well,
he's 34.
34? Well, we're going to have to take a short break on this countdown to see how old your son is. But we'll be right back after the commercial break. To the National Federation of the Blind Newsline Indiana show. We're entertained today by our special guest, Dr. Mark Maurer, and his lovely wife, Miss Patricia Maurer. We have several other questions from our audience. So, first question,
Dr.
please.
Dr. Maurer, may I ask you some personal questions that can be answered with a short answer, I hope? Is that possible?
Ask away.
How old are you?
I'm 67.
All right. Well, have you been blind your whole life?
I have indeed.
How did you start learning to be blind?
Well, I didn't know I was blind.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nobody told me. I had a tiny bit of remaining vision, and I only learned that I was blind when I was six. And somebody told me that I needed an operation, and I went to it, and when I came back, I was totally blind. So I learned that I'd been blind all along, but I didn't know. This was annoying. I was bummed about it, as they say. But my mother told me that I had to go outside and play, and I didn't want to, and she dragged me out and made me do it. And I thought, all right, maybe I should run away then. And anyhow, I got through it because she told me to get outside. And since that time, I've, you know, when I was 18 years old, I ran across this program that the National Federation of the Blind was running to teach people about blindness. And I thought, what is there to know? I've been blind a long time. I've been living with it. And I went there and I found out that the story is that blindness can't prevent you from doing what you want. If you think up a way to do it, if you imagine a system to do it that'll let you participate in society, then you can do whatever you want. And it isn't whether you can do it, but whether or not you have the support network and the imagination. And I thought, this is new, and I stuck around to find out, and I've still been learning ever since. You know, I didn't know whether a blind person could drive an automobile. I imagined that a blind person could if you got enough information, but I didn't know because nobody that I knew of had ever done it. I mean, we've all tinkered with it a little, but usually with somebody in the other seat telling you what to do and so forth. But to do it independently with nobody else in the car, mostly we haven't done that. And so we built the car that the blind could drive. Now, do we expect to build a lot more of them? Probably not. The automated driving systems are coming, and we are working with the auto manufacturers and the companies that build the automated systems to make sure that they'll have an interface that we can use. Because I want to have one of those pieces of transportation available to me, and I don't want the idiotic idea that just because I don't have an operator's license means I can't use it. So I was last week working with one of the technology companies that's building the interface over in Israel because I want to bring to those companies the idea that they have an audience bigger than the one they imagine.
Is there another question from the audience?
Dr. Maurer, good evening. How do you, throughout your struggle in your journey, how do you cope with, you know, dealing with your blindness?
Well, in one sense, I don't deal with it, which is to say, I don't think about my blindness.
Yeah.
When I wake up in the morning, I know that if I have the energy and the time for it, I'll get a little exercise in. When I get up in the morning, I know that one of the things I'm going to do is cook breakfast. I'm going to make coffee. I'm going to pack my briefcase and put on my necktie. So I don't think about it. Now, I have thought about it, so I have a little bag that has my necktie in it, and it has a Braille card in it, and it tells me what color my necktie is. And I have a color identifier that tells me what color my shirt is. Things like that. So it isn't that I ignore it. I don't, when I need to think about it, I do. But thinking about it is the lesser part of what I do. I plan to put a new corporation together soon to think up some technology that I think we can invent that'll be useful for educational programs. My blindness doesn't enter into that. I how to raise enough money, I have to do that, and I have to get the documents together for the corporate. In other words, most of the time my blindness doesn't enter into my thought process. Now, the taxi driver who brought us here today was a guy that I could do without. And one of the things that he wanted to do was grab me in a vice-like grip and sort of steer me this way and that. And I thought, you know, if I were going to be very long in your company, I would talk you out of this, or you and I would get into fisticuffs, because I don't want you to take charge of my person. I'm in charge of me, you are not. So sometimes the blindness gets in the way, but it's not the blindness mostly, it's the misunderstanding about blindness and all of the disadvantages that come from the prejudices about blindness.
Yeah.
So those things I have to worry about. But the blindness itself, I've got under control.
No, Dr. Mao, I have a question for you. As we know, Americans with Disabilities Act is under a little attack. And once I heard you speak regarding what some businessmen and what some congressmen may be collaborating, and I kind of want you to expound on that speech that you gave. I really like the portion of it that says, not for you. So could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, okay, so there's a bill in the Congress that says that you cannot, well, the Americans with Disabilities Act was adopted in 1990. It became effective, most of it, in 1992. And that bill says that if you have a disability, then you're welcome to places of public accommodation. And that means things like hotels and theaters and like that. Now, there is a bill in the Congress that says that you cannot bring a complaint against an operator of a public accommodation unless you've given them advance warning of 120 days, and then they get 120 days to fix up whatever was wrong. So if you go there and they say, you can't come in here because you're blind, which some people have said to me over the years, then you notify them that they violated the law, and you tell them which section of the law they violated, and they say that they'll let you in next time and there's been no violation of the law. In other words, ignorance of the law is a perfect excuse. In most cases, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, in this case, it is. That bill has passed the House. It has not passed the Senate, and there has been a letter written by 43 members of the Senate saying that they're against this bill, and that probably is enough members of the Senate so that a vote to clear the debate on the Senate floor can't happen. I hope that's true, because this cuts the opportunity for people with disabilities to complain about discrimination. They say, well, you know, we don't really know what we're supposed to do. The law has been there since 1990. The regulations have been there just almost as long. There's been a lot written about it, and if you want to know what you're supposed to do, just call up and ask us. We know. And so we'll tell you. And then so I put all of this together in a thought process and wrote a speech about it. And what I said then, maybe this is what you're after, I don't know. What I said then was, a lot of the hotel operators don't want blind people to come. I said, isn't our money as good as other people's money?
Yes.
And the answer to the question is no, it isn't. Because, you know, you don't fit in. They don't want you there because you don't fit in. Now, is this true of all hotel operators? Of course not. Here we are in this hotel, and we're being welcomed, and our money is just fine here. And
yes.
Not only that, but we were welcomed with warmth at the front desk. I'm not saying all hotel operators are like that, but the Asian Hotel Operators Organization has decided that they don't want to have to worry about what to do with disabled people because they think it's an extra burden upon them, and they don't want us to show up. So it doesn't matter whether we have money. They don't want us to come at all. That's my opinion of their opinion. So there you have it.
Well, there we have it. That's really, it's unfortunate, their loss.
See, one of the things that's true in the subject of disability is this. People with disabilities are often noticeably different from people without disabilities. And that means you have to do something different to welcome them to your place. It isn't hard to do, but you have to do it. And when I come into the hotel lobby, I'm going to say, so where's the elevator? And somebody's going to have to be able to be bright enough to tell me. Now, I can extract information from people because I've been doing it all these years. So I can say, would you say it's to my right, and then I point.
Yes.
Lots of people know when you point that that means that's the direction you'd like to know if it is. And they say yes or no. And I can ask a bunch of yes-no questions and get to the answer. But they have to be willing to talk about it. And they have to know that it's a good idea to tell me. All right. So I was in Israel the other day. And I got into this hotel, and there's no Braille anywhere. Well, it's hard to operate an elevator with no Braille. It's hard to tell which number goes where. And when you get to the floor and you get out on the floor, it's hard to figure out whether you got on the right floor. And even if you get on the right floor, when you go to the hotel room, it's hard to identify that this is the one you had in mind. Of course, you could just stick your key in every door and up and down the hall, but that takes a long time. And besides, people might think you're breaking in, and they might rush out and hit you in the head or something. All of this is a disadvantage. So having the Braille on the hotel doors is really nice. And it's not just a convenience for me. It's a convenience for other people because it means I'm less trouble for the hotel operators. Otherwise, I have to go down to the front desk if I can figure out where it is and get the right button on the elevator. And if I can't do that, I just bang on hotel doors till I find somebody to ask, you know, and that annoys the customers. In other words, it's really good for the hotel to have the Braille on the doors because that way I can use the place without having to disrupt the system. So they ought to want to do it. Do they want to do it? Some do. Some don't.
Well, what some do and some don't, my producer's telling me we got to take a break. So we're going to do that, and we'll be right back. Well, we've had a great show today. Wouldn't you say so?
Oh, yeah.
So I trust that you learned about the National Federation of the Blind, and I trust that it has invigorated you and inspired you so that you can go out and help bridge gaps of visible differences. So we're going to have closing remarks by Dr. Mark Maurer, and once again, we just want to thank you for coming out, and please come out to our convention this week. We have a lot of good information for you. So, Dr. Maurer, would you take us out?
Thank you for inviting me onto the program. I want to say this. The National Federation of the Blind has a great many exciting people in it. They're fun to be with. They have great ideas. We have lots of resources, lots of dreams. We can build things together. If you find a place in your family, your community, where there are blind people who need assistance, who'd like to have some opportunities they don't, who want to learn new things, be sure to let us know. Our president here is Ron Brown. He is a great guy. I've known him for, what, 40 years or so?
Yes, sir.
It is a wonderful organization to be with. If you want help, come ask.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And we'll see you all next week. God bless.
Amen.